So welcome back to the BCFM with Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling, now back in the UK from New Zealand after a quite interesting flight through Qatar, the home of Al Jazeera, who seemed to be just trying to run their airline perfectly normally. And we had a flight in from New Zealand into Qatar, which was absolutely packed. And somebody said on the flight, well, the reason that they don't need to have social distancing on this flight is because there's hardly any coronavirus in New Zealand, which sort of made some sense to me. But then once we got on an aircraft from Doha to Heathrow, it was very, very different, with a lot of spacing. In fact, like only every three rows was seemed to be being used, and people were very well spaced apart on that aircraft. In fact, Qatar Airways seemed to be running almost a normal service, with the gate next to us at Doha was another jet heading off to Manchester with a whole load of more people there. So it seems to have become a bit of a hub for the global airline industry, Doha, mainly because Qatar Airways, of course, is backed by vast amounts of oil money from Qatar itself. But Martin, this whole business is also, there's lots going on in the Middle East generally, isn't there? In the background to all of this, before we get into talking about the virus itself, we've also heard Trump this week talking about shooting down Iranian gunboats. So I'm not quite sure how you shoot down a gunboat. I thought you sank them. But anyway, that's what Trump said.
It is. And of course, he's complaining that his ships are being harassed by Iranian gunboats, which are basically speedboats. But of course, they are basically just outside Iranian territorial waters. So it's the sort of thing you can expect to happen.
Coming into Doha, we actually flew over the Straits of Hormuz, although you couldn't really see, it was dark, but you could see the outlines on both sides of lights from Iran and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So this is basically a very important point in the world. It was quite fascinating to kind of just be floating in the sky above the Straits of Hormuz. Why is the Straits of Hormuz seen as so important still?
Well, it's because a lot of a big proportion of the world's oil goes through it on its way to the market. And that was a problem during the Iran-Iraq war, of course, when the Armilla Patrol, you know, the British sent a couple of gunboats out there basically to protect the Iraqi tanker fleet from being attacked by the Iranians rather than the other way around. But, of course, it's still of highly strategic importance because of where it is and because of the oil industry.
But hang on a minute, because the oil industry is no more, almost. You know, the demand for oil has absolutely fallen. So it's almost as if there's no need for any tankers to go through there anymore.
Well, I mean, as you say, we've had the interesting situation where you now have to pay $37 if you're an oil producer in the United States to get, you give people $37 to take a barrel off your hands because they've got no storage capacity. But of course, that's not the case in the world oil market, because storage is carried out on tankers effectively in the just-in-time supply system. So they haven't reached that limit yet. The oil market is in turmoil because of oversupply, because of the price war between the Russians and the Saudis, which is strategically geared towards taking down the US shale industry. This is a symptom of the wider collapse of the financial markets, because, of course, the petrodollar is dependent on the oil price and so on.
They're propped up by governments, aren't they? The governments don't want these markets to collapse, so they're pumping money into them.
Well, that's right. And of course, in the short run, they've managed to get some momentum in the market, which basically means that those who've made bad choices and bad decisions over the past few years, for example, buying back their own shares in order to ramp the share price, they are now being bailed out by the taxpayer. And ultimately, that will then be dumped on the shoulders of the non-wealthy population, unless there's some kind of massive political change.
Well, one of the key things I think take-homes from this virus is the role that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has played in the policy that we're now seeing, this lockdown particularly in the UK and in the US, is basically Bill Gates' personal foundation policy. Interesting, looking at the funding for the British government's Imperial College modelling team, including this chap Neil Ferguson that keeps popping up on TV and radio. This is directly from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation going to Imperial College. It, identically, John Hopkins University, which has been producing all the graphics for many of the main TV companies, exactly the same, you know, doing exactly the same thing, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But we've also seen, Martin, there's the several articles around saying that actually Bill Gates is the target of the most conspiracy theories to do with the virus. So this almost seems like an attempt to deflect criticism from Gates by the mainstream press.
Well, I mean, Gates is a very prominent character, so prominent that now that Trump has cut WHO funding by the United States, he is the biggest funder of the World Health Organization, which, if you think about it, is a bit bizarre. The World Health Organization is supposed to be a public sector body bringing together governments to come to some consensus about world health. But the main funder is a private individual with very strong interests in big pharma and the vaccine industry. That surely must represent a massive conflict of interest.
Well, CNBC has been saying this week that billionaire Bill Gates has been outspoken about steps global leaders need to take to combat the spread of coronavirus. Now, an analysis of TV and social media by the New York Times shows that Gates is the leading target of conspiracy theorists who are making false claims linking the billionaire to the pandemic. Well, I don't think anybody is actually saying Bill Gates released this, although some might do. I think the main problem with Gates is that he's predicted this. Many is being seen almost like a religious prophet, and that everything he's suggested, the way governments should be responding, Martin, is the way they are actually responding. So let me just read a little bit from the article. It says the conspiracy theories falsely linking Gates to the coronavirus origins in some way or other were mentioned 1.2 million times on television or social media from February to April, according to analysis by the New York Times and Zignor Labs, media analytics company. That's roughly 33% more than the second most popular coronavirus conspiracy theory topic at the time, which linked 5G wireless technology with the pandemic. In fact, in April, conspiracy theories linking Gates to coronavirus, including some claiming Gates had prior knowledge that there would be a coronavirus pandemic, or claiming the billionaire wanted to implant the global population with vaccine microchips to fight the COVID-19 disease, peaked at 18,000 mentions on TV and social media per day. So, I mean, some of this, it's almost like some of this may be true, some of it may not be true. Can you see the wood for the trees here, Martin?
Well, I think there are various theories about what's going on out there. Leaving Gates aside, let's just talk about what's been said by governments. The US government has definitely run with the idea that the virus was a bioweapon potentially being developed at the Wuhan biolaboratory. The Chinese have responded by saying, well, we think you may have brought this in during the military games which took place in Wuhan in the end of last year. And this morning, the Chinese ambassador in Moscow has said that we've now got the epidemiological studies which suggest that the source of the virus is not in Wuhan, but somewhere else, quite possibly in the United States of America. And of course, Fort Detrick, which is their version of the Wuhan laboratory, was closed down in June last year because of some violation of safety procedures, which they haven't bothered to tell anybody what they were. And they've also, because the Chinese ambassador was using basically scientific evidence and saying our scientists are now looking at the COVID virus, and what came to Wuhan was basically derived from a virus which didn't develop inside China. Now, this is a developing story.
Martin, isn't this just a blame game here?
Well, it is a blame game in one sense, and you could say, well, they're just trying to point the finger at each other for it. But there's also a serious question here. Is it a bioweapon? And if it is, has it leaked accidentally or deliberately? And I'm afraid my suspicion is that it is a bioweapon. Pepe Escobar is another analyst. He has pointed out that both ABC News and the Times of Israel have said in the last week that the Israeli intelligence services were warned of a pandemic coming from China in November, which was a month before the Chinese said that they'd got a problem. Now, how would the US intelligence services know that something was happening when the Chinese themselves didn't know it was happening? That's what's coming out of things that are being said by the Times of Israel and by ABC News.
Yeah, okay. So I think it's pretty clear that what we were told a month ago about this being a short period of a few weeks of lockdown is simply not true. It's going to be extended possibly till the end of the year. And in the hope that this virus is going to come along, the vaccine is going to come along, even though we know that this can reinfect people, this virus, at least that's what we're told, and therefore a vaccine is unlikely to be effective. There seems to be a kind of very basic failure of logic and rationality in what we're being told here.
Well, I mean, the idea of Gates is on the record as saying that he wants to actually push vaccination in the developing world anyway. And there's evidence, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has pointed out, that his previous vaccination efforts on polio in India and on tetanus in Kenya were absolutely criminally irresponsible in the minimum, and criminal in terms of actually giving people polio rather than vaccinating them from polio.
These things are
out there.
Martin, what Robert Kennedy's implying there is that the Gates Foundation was actually experimenting on people, and many of them were dying as a result of the so-called vaccines they were being given.
That's right. So in other words, the very least you could say is that Gates is very, very keen on pushing vaccination under any circumstances. And he definitely has raised the idea that people could have a chip injected into them, which would show their vaccination history and their health, you know, that you could be scanned and everybody would know immediately. And of course, the suggestion is that people would have this digital pass, that they were coronavirus free, and then they could go to football matches, whatever. But as you rightly point out, Tony, it's not even clear.
Martin, sorry to interrupt, but you know, this ID 2020 that he's come up with could either be a physical card or it could be some sort of microchip implant. But the key thing here is surely that it might be that in order to do things like access benefits, access universal credit, or to go into supermarkets, use public transport, this seems to be what Gates is trying to get to happen here. Is that you have to have this digital ID in order to get all these things. And that could mean that if you don't, you'll end up on the fringes of society, in poverty and possibly starving.
Well, I mean, we know that the USAID, the United States aid organization, which is basically a front for the US government and the CIA, pushed the Indians, the Modi government, to try and get rid of cash in India, which, of course, was absolutely disastrous for lots of small businesses and people who don't have bank accounts, and they had to stop doing it. But the idea of having everybody in a grid which can be monitored by the powers that be is definitely on the agenda. And you'd have thought that you might try that in a country like Switzerland, where most people probably have credit cards, but it'd be quite bizarre that the Indian government went along with it when perhaps half the population haven't got bank accounts. But there you are, they tried to do it. And that shows how important they seem to think it is.
This Gates article on CNBC talking about the Gates conspiracy theories. Gates apparently has stockpiled food, according to one theory, in his basement to prepare for a pandemic. And that was according to his wife, Melinda. And he gave a TED Talk speech in 2015 warning people that an infectious virus was a greater risk to humanity than nuclear war. What he didn't specify, Martin, in that talk was whether that would be a deliberately engineered virus or a natural one.
Well, obviously, he's claiming that there won't be any deliberate. You know, there is a danger from natural viruses. We know that. I mean, the interconnected nature of modern society makes us particularly vulnerable to these things. But nevertheless, there could be People developing biological weaponry. Now, in actual fact, biological weaponry is banned.
This may be biological weapon then.
Yes, biological weaponry in theory is banned. I saw quite an interesting comment, I think it was on the Moon of Alabama website, where they're pointing out that the US has got hundreds of biological research laboratories around the world. They're funded by the Pentagon. They're not funded by the health ministry. And they claim that they are developing what they're doing in these various places. Fort Detrick is obviously the port and down of this system, but they've got hundreds of others all over the place. Some of them are known about, some of them are not known about. And they've been claiming that they're developing mechanisms for dealing with biological attack. So we're not developing bioweapons ourselves, but other people may be. Don't say who, could be the Russians, could be the Chinese, could be terrorists like Osama bin Laden or whoever. They're developing these bioweapons. Therefore, we have to research so that we can deal with a bioweapon attack if it happens. And what's pointed out in this post is if that's what they were doing, they would have been ready for this virus. Because if it is a virus, whether it's a bioweapon attack or not, the way you deal with it would be the same. You'd have to be able to, you know, trace people and all the rest of it, have the right hospital staff in place, etc. And quite clearly, they weren't doing any of that. So it's quite obvious that all of these facilities, which are funded by the US taxpayer, are in fact developing bioweapons. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And of course, they have used bioweapons in the past, in North Korea, for example, during the Korean War, and also against Cuba, where, you know, various pests and other things were infiltrated into the country. And of course, China has just had a massive African swine flu outbreak. Bird flu has decimated their chicken flock. And then something like this comes along. And as you know from last week's interview that we broadcast with the guy from the GRU, the Russian military intelligence services, they are actively looking into the idea that this is a bioweapons attack designed to destroy the Chinese economy and incidentally lead to a massive bailout of the banking system in the West, which was just about to collapse anyway.
And well, you're referring
there to bailing it out unless you've got a coronavirus to cover it.
You're referring there to this interview with Vladimir Kavachkov, who's a colonel in the GRU, and he is effectively linking this to the 9/11 attacks. He's also linking it to what he says effectively is it's a biological stroke psychological warfare operation.
Yes, and I think those people who are saying that there is no real coronavirus out there, it's all basically hype by the evil Gates and all the rest of it, I tend to the view that it probably is a biological weapon and therefore incredibly dangerous. That's why it's got such a long incubation period. It doesn't kill loads of people. It just basically messes up the economy. And that's the purpose of it. You don't want to kill everybody. You just want to create a different circumstance for your plan, whatever it is. And of course, the 9/11 attacks, the Russian general staff, the Chinese general staff, the Iranian general staff are all very well aware that this was carried out from inside the US security forces, probably with collaboration with Mossad and with MI6. And anyway, people say, you can't say things like that. I say, well, this is just, that's their working assumption. And okay. I don't think they're wrong. And of course, that and if we come back to the 9/11 attacks, the follow-on attack from with the anthrax letters that were sent out, that definitely traced back to Fort Detrick, no doubt about it. So some elements within the US security forces were definitely going around killing people to try and make the attack look worse than it otherwise would have done.
CNBC, I'm going to try and drag you back to get your views on the Bill Gates and what were these so-called conspiracy theories. But this article really is what it's saying is that Bill Gates is spreading coronavirus. Well, that's not, I don't think there's anybody with half a brain cell that's saying that. What they're saying is that the programs for responding to it are all Gates programs, that his money is involved in Imperial College in London, at John Hopkins University, in doing the analysis, the day-to-day blow-by-blow accounts in real time. It's all Gates money that's doing that. And the pressure, the lobby that is on governments to have lockdowns, as in the UK and in the US, particularly severe ones, are from the Gates Foundation. In fact, he's saying It needs to be just this week. There must be at least another 10 weeks of lockdown. That's what he's basically saying. And it's his policy that we're getting. We're not really getting any kind of independent policy either in Britain or in the US.
Well, it's not just Gates who's calling for lockdown. I come back to what I was saying a minute ago. If this is a bioweapon attack, then the lockdown may be the only thing you can do in the short run. The Chinese definitely went for a lockdown test and tracing approach. Basically, what they did is they switched into biological warfare attack mode, and they've been training for a biological warfare attack against them for years because they've expected that there was going to be something like this coming along the line.
Okay,
so that's the reality.
Let's have a listen to a Syrian girl. Not quite sure what her real name is, but she's someone we've had on this show in the past, on and off. And she has done a summary based on lots and lots of mainstream and alternative media posts, a summary of what she makes of where we are now with this coronavirus. It's fairly long. I think it's about 7 minutes long, but we've got a lot to listen to. So we'll see if we can pull that apart when we've heard from Syrian girl. And the guy who introduces it is a German guy who's done a sort of little analysis of it as well. So he will be appearing at the start and the finish of her report.
The other day, Syrian girl, who by now probably long finished her PhD in chemistry in Australia, posted the following video summing up what we know about the history of the coronavirus. We know it, but the corporate media does not. They skipped over the fact that the virus had CRISPR cutting marks where the HIV virus was spliced into it.
You may have heard that Trump has defunded the World Health Organization and is considering firing Fauci. Bill Gates has been up in arms about this on Twitter. Even Lindsey Graham weighed in to ease the tensions between these two billionaires. You see, Bill Gates is the WHO's biggest donor, and Fauci is Bill Gates' right-hand man. While Trump doesn't want to take the fall for the coronavirus debacle, Bill Gates sees Trump as a threat to his business interests. You see, Bill is investing billions into producing a coronavirus vaccine that he intends to lace with a digital identifier called ID2020. He needs the WHO to remain credible in order to advise people to take this vaccine. We've also been told that Bill Gates predicted the pandemic, but was it merely a prediction or something more? Today, we will discuss this, as well as Bill Gates' real agenda behind creating a vaccine with a digital ID. Roger Stone has come out and said what many are secretly thinking, that Bill Gates didn't predict the pandemic but caused it. Now, there's no evidence for this, but Bill Gates certainly agrees the pandemic could be man-made.
I think an epidemic, either naturally caused or intentionally caused.
The uncanny timing of Bill Gates' predictions of a coronavirus pandemic has people questioning whether it was more than just an educated guess. On the 7th of November 2019, a Netflix documentary called The Next Pandemic was released, and it starred Bill Gates. This was 1 month before the first known case of COVID-19 was discovered in December, and the Chinese government hadn't even announced the outbreak until January 2020. As if the timing wasn't uncanny enough, that documentary stated that the next pandemic would be a coronavirus outbreak that might start at a Chinese wet market. In 2017, Dr. Fauci, who works with Bill Gates, stated with certainty that there would be an outbreak during Trump's presidency.
Is that there is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases, both chronic infectious diseases in the sense of already ongoing disease, and we have certainly a large burden of that, but also there will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak.
Another uncannily timed event occurred in October 2019, 2 months before the outbreak in China. Bill Gates hosted Event 201, which simulated the coronavirus pandemic. There's always a drill before the main event, isn't there? Also, in September of 2019, a few months before the outbreak, Bill Gates announced ID2020, a plan to introduce vaccinations with digital ID. Last month, Bill Gates did an AMA where he suggested a coronavirus vaccine could come with a digital certificate. He passed it off as a faraway hypothetical concept and didn't mention the fact he had been investing in it, nor did he mention that he wants to tattoo that digital certificate into people's skin with quantum dots that will be visible with smartphones. Essentially, he wants to tattoo a Microsoft logo on everyone. So it's not just herd immunity, but herd branding. He stated that we won't be allowed to travel or leave our homes unless we accept this vaccine.
Eventually, what we'll have is certificates of who's a recovered person, who's a vaccinated person, because you don't want people moving around the world where you'll have some countries that won't have it under control. Sadly, you don't want to completely block off the ability for those, you know, people to go there and come back and move around. So eventually there will be sort of this digital immunity proof that, you know, will help facilitate the global reopening up.
You may think this plan seems far-fetched, but the British government has already embraced it.
We are looking at an immunity certificate, how people who have had the disease have got the antibodies and therefore have immunity can show that.
The general public may be harder to convince, so they're going to sell them the idea step by step. First, they will suggest that those who have already survived coronavirus and acquired antibodies will be given special privileges, which were previously our rights, such as the ability to travel, go back to work, or even leave our homes. Most people would find this idea quite reasonable given the dangers of the virus. However, the implications of this are already dystopian. Out of economic desperation, some may choose to purposely infect themselves with the virus in order to gain antibodies. But we don't even know if you can become immune after contracting coronavirus. There have been reports of reinfection, and the virus is constantly mutating. There's even a chance that the virus could be more deadly if you catch it the second time, because your immune system might hyper-respond.
If you contract COVID-19 and survive it, you might be entitled to what is called an immunity passport.
Once people accept this scenario, they'll suggest that only those who have been vaccinated can leave their homes. Anyone who refuses will remain under house arrest. In this way, they won't have to make taking vaccines compulsory, but they can make life unlivable if you refuse. This won't just be for coronavirus. This will eventually apply to other viruses too. Imagine a world where people born with HIV are no longer allowed to travel and are completely isolated from society. Imagine having to declare your entire medical history before entering a building. Imagine those without coronavirus antibodies being forced to wear a star and placed in isolation camps. This won't stop at viruses. Once our God-given freedoms are labeled as privileges that can be taken away, the concept will extend to social credit systems. Perhaps if you become an enemy of the state, you won't be able to even purchase groceries because your digital identifier will block you from doing so.
You know, if you go out and you want to buy groceries, you need a picture on a card. You need ID. You go out and you want to buy anything. You need ID and you need your picture.
Not yet, Trump. Not yet. I think you've revealed too much. And what happens if you refuse the tattoo?
Right, so that'll be this many dollars. And if you could just go ahead and, like, put your tattoo in that shit.
What are the odds?
Where's your tattoo? Tattoo.
So why is Bill Gates doing this? Does he really care about public health or the spread of coronavirus? People's first instincts may be to conclude this is all about money. And that's part of it. Bill Gates wants to monopolize vaccines. Microsoft follows a strategy to take their competition out of business called Embrace, Extend, Extinguish, which they got sued for. Perhaps they're applying this concept to vaccines. Embrace them, extend them to include digital ID, and then extinguish any of your competition. Thereby, making a Bill Gates branded vaccine, which has a digital ID, far more likely to be the one that's accepted by governments. But it's not all about profit. Bill Gates' agenda is much worse. It's eugenics. Bill Gates has openly stated that one of his goals is to lower the world's population because of global warming. Bill Gates gets his eugenicist ideas from his father, who was the head of Planned Parenthood. This didn't stop him from having 3 kids of his own, though. He even went as far as to admit he wants to lower the world's population through the use of vaccines.
So you've got a thing on the left, CO2, that you want to get to zero, and that's going to be based on the number of people, the services each person's using on average, the energy on average for each service, and the CO2 being put out per unit of energy. So let's look at each one of these and see how we can get this down to zero. Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero. Now, that's back from high school algebra. But let's take a look. First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
But how can one achieve population control with a vaccine? Well, the World Health Organization has a patent on a tetanus vaccine that causes infertility because of an autoimmune response. They called the infertility a design feature of the vaccine. There were accusations that the tetanus vaccine was used in Kenya to make women infertile. It's the WHO that has this patent, but as we know, Bill Gates is the number one sponsor of the WHO through his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and his Gavi Alliance. There are currently lawsuits being filed by girls in Australia who believe the Gardasil vaccine caused their ovaries to fail. Bill Gates is also funding a program to mutilate the genitals of little African boys. It's also not encouraging to know that Gates has already filed for indemnity insurance for any future coronavirus vaccine that he produces, so that if he ends up killing people, he can't be sued. You see, Bill Gates can also reduce the world's population with this new coronavirus vaccine. For some diseases, the vaccine can make catching the virus even more deadly by making the immune system's response work against the body in what is called antibody-dependent enhancement.
And there are diseases in which you vaccinate someone, they get infected with what you're trying to protect them with, and you actually enhance the infection. You can get a good feel for that in animal models.
This was the case in the original SARS vaccine that was trialed in animals. And as we know, COVID-19 is a type of SARS, so it's likely going to face the same problem. Except Bill Gates is skipping the animal trials this time. How can we trust a man with our healthcare while he openly says he wants to depopulate the world? How can we trust a man to stop coronavirus when he can't keep viruses from invading his own Windows operating system? How can we trust a man who has failed to keep vaccines safe in the past? Robert Kennedy made a post on his Instagram pointing out that Bill Gates' vaccine programs have resulted in deaths and paralysis. Even the WHO admitted a mutant strain of polio resulted from their vaccine program paralyzed more people than wild polio. When Bill Gates made education his goal, he forced Common Core onto America, which he admits was a complete failure, but also doubled down on. When he made the environment his goal, he almost destroyed the Earth with a wacky cloud whitening idea to end global warming. How could one man be allowed to wield that much power when he isn't elected? He also isn't a self-made billionaire. He's a college dropout whose parents were rich and well-connected. In fact, he keeps some pretty unscrupulous associates. Bill Gates agreed to associate with Jeffrey Epstein after he was convicted of raping a child. He said of that relationship, "His lifestyle is intriguing." Would you let an associate of Jeffrey Epstein inject you with an unknown substance? It's also bizarre that Microsoft chose now to feature spirit cooker Marina Abramovic in their advertisements. fueling rumors of occult agendas. Philanthropic billionaires like Bill Gates and George Soros, who claim to be giving away their money, are not to be trusted.
Oh, I didn't get rich by writing a lot of checks.
Remember that he tried to deprive the co-founder of Microsoft of his share of the money. So say no to the digital ID. But be cautious of dialectics that are being set up. Just because you don't trust the vaccine that comes from Bill Gates doesn't mean you don't believe vaccines work. Just because you believe in the right to bodily autonomy and don't trust certain pharmaceutical companies doesn't mean that you don't believe in vaccination programs. Just because Bill Gates is pushing his agenda through the coronavirus pandemic doesn't mean the virus is a hoax. This episode of The Simpsons may explain this point well.
We're here to come up with the next phony baloney crisis to put Americans back where they belong, in dark rooms glued to their televisions, too terrified to skip the commercials. I think we should go with a good old-fashioned public health scare.
Yeah.
A new disease. No one's immune. It's like the summer of the shark, except instead of a shark, it's an epidemic. And instead of summer, it's all the time.
That is...
Janice, we do have standards. This can't be a made-up disease. The only moral thing to do is release a deadly virus into the general public.
George Martinson at Peak Prosperity, who has a PhD in toxicology, has been following the virus on YouTube. He says this virus will be with us for a while, and that it will very likely mutate and come back again and again, killing us again and again, because vaccines probably won't work. And if one does, we face an even worse fate. Digital certificates from Bill Gates will allow us to leave our homes, go to work, and buy food. Bill Gates will even let us renew our driver's license and be molested at airports by TSA if he likes us and does not cancel our certificates and our access to our bank accounts and credit cards. Talk about Mark of the Beast. Too bad for Bill and the globalists that gold and silver coins are not digital. John F. Kennedy Jr. published his interview with Bill Gates in George magazine. I actually talked to his sister Caroline Kennedy, who said her brother named the magazine after George Washington because he greatly admired George Washington and the founding fathers. JFK Jr. died in a plane crash on July 6, 1999 at Martha's Vineyard. Barry Chamish, who had written a lot on the assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, critical of the Israeli government's involvement, said that the Mossad had a motive to kill JFK Jr. to stop the forthcoming article. But John Jr. was thinking of running for the Senate in New York against Hillary Clinton. Another definite no-no. In this interview, Bill Gates, in February of 1997, says that in 2020, the worst-case scenario is an overpopulated planet choked to extinction by a lung-attacking virus. The following is from George Webb's Twitter feed. George, February 97 issue. Platform 2020 discussed by Bill Gates with John F. Kennedy Jr. Worst case scenario, an overpopulated planet choked by lung attacking virus. This all started when I saw the video from Syrian Girl. I posted it on a forum and got responses online by Jim and by email from Bob in DC. Inquiring minds want to know how Bill Gates back in 1997 could predict our future in 2020.
So that's Syrian Girl, along with the German commentator at the beginning and the start, looking at this fascinating idea of a very, very long period that Bill Gates has been predicting and looking at this. And interesting that he decided to call his digital ID program ID 2020. I mean, it could be that this has been engineered, but it could be that it's just that Bill Gates is an incredible prophet. But one of the amazing aspects to all of this, of course, is that vaccines quite regularly do cause much more of a problem for people than they're supposed to actually be solving. And one of the reasons for this is because in 1986 in the United States, a law was passed absolving vaccine manufacturers from liability. The US Congress passed something called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, the NCVIA, which was to leave judgments about vaccine design to the Federal Drug Administration, the National Vaccine Program, rather than juries. So in other words, saying that if a parent has a child vaccinated and that child then either gets some sort of disease or dies, that there's no recourse in law to the vaccine program. So this does sort of suggest that vaccines for a long, long time, Martin, have been something which has been not necessarily as safe as we would have hoped they have, especially since you can't, if you believe you've been injured by a vaccine in the US, you're not allowed to go to court in order to sue the vaccine manufacturer or the person that decided to give you that vaccine.
Well, I think Syrian Girl made a very good point, which is criticising the way Bill Gates does business doesn't mean that we're saying that all vaccination is wrong. Vaccination has obviously worked in some in the past in some cases, you know, but on the other hand, we've got to be eternally vigilant about people who are pushing basically crackpot solutions. It's not even clear that there is a vaccine for this disease.
I thought we could have a look through some of these blogs and independent news sites. So I was just talking about Vigilant Citizen there. Another is Mint Press News, which you've pointed out a few times, Martin, with Whitney Webb, has been doing some very good work on exposing some of the existing stuff floating around in the old-fashioned mainstream media, which has been pulled together to show that some of the, basically some of the problems may be with this virus may be originated in Fort Detrick in Maryland. So Whitney Webb is on there, but another story that's on there at the moment is about sanctioned countries. Sanctioned countries apparently are now leading the world in the fight against coronavirus. Countries currently facing US sanctions, around a quarter of the world's population, are faring far better than the US and leading the global fight against COVID-19.
Well, I think the Venezuelans, because they're under sanctions by the US, have handled the coronavirus situation quite well. I've sent you a link to an article about that. Because, of course, if you're under sanctions, Cuba has managed reasonably well as well because they're under sanctions. And if you're under sanctions, you don't have a lot of people coming and going and you have to struggle to find foreign exchange and so on. But it means if you've got a mobilised population, what happened in Venezuela is they shut the borders. They said, if you've got any symptoms, contact us on this website. 20,000 people did. And all of those people were visited within the next 2 days and tested. And that's how they dealt with it. And, of course, they've got a lockdown going on because basically they are at war with the United States of America. This is all ultimately going to resolve itself as a military problem, I fear.
And then another website which has been shining is called Off Guardian. There's an article on there at the moment, which is just uploaded a couple of days ago. The headline is Why You Can't Trust the UK's Daily COVID-19 Updates. Well, it's all very well watching someone on TV or listening to the radio sounding confidently that they know what's going on. But the daily COVID-19 death reports issued by UK government, Off Guardian says, are generally misleading and being so misrepresented by the media as they amount to little more than a lie. Each day, the UK's Department of Health and Social Care releases a report entitled Daily Number of COVID-19 Associated UK Deaths in Hospital. The media then report these numbers as the daily death toll, presented as if all these people, A, died of COVID-19, and B, died in the preceding 24 hours, neither of which is true. So they're looking at this whole thing of lies, damn lies and statistics, Martin.
Well, that's right. And of course, they are off-guarding, as I understand it, are generally of the view that there is no coronavirus and it's all a psychological warfare operation.
No, I don't think that's the case. No, that they're pulling apart the analysis that the government is giving and they're saying, well, actually, what they're telling you is a skewed version of the facts and they're not being frank and honest.
Well, they're probably, in my view, underestimating the tally. Because they weren't counting people who died at home or people who died in care homes. Now, the Moon of Alabama people are, which a website I use, and the Saker, the Saker doesn't believe that it's a bioweapon. I think he's wrong about that. Moon of Alabama are the German guy behind that is not sure about that. I think that there's an awful lot of that we don't know. and no more than the government know. I mean, I don't think people like Matt Hancock are in on this. I don't think Boris Johnson is in on this. Boris Johnson obviously wasn't informed when Trump and Pompeo made the decision to assassinate Soleimani. They didn't bother to consult the British Prime Minister. Why would they? And so, therefore, I don't think Trump has been involved in this either. Trump famously said after 9/11, the buildings must have been bombed because buildings like that don't collapse like that. Giuliani, who's his lawyer, was also, we've got evidence that he was aware that there was something going on. But Trump clearly is a chump and doesn't know what's going on.
Okay, well, look, going back to Off Guardian, and Rosemary Fry is writing there. She's saying her headline is The Seven-Step Path from Pandemic to Totalitarianism. There are just seven steps, she says, from pandemic declaration to permanent totalitarianism. And many jurisdictions are about to start step five, she says. This is Rosemary Fry in Off Guardian. She says, and I'll briefly summarise what those steps are. She says, step one, a new virus starts to spread around the world. The World Health Organization declares a pandemic. Then she says, step two, national, state, provincial, municipal leaders, public health officials start daily press briefings. They pump out statistics and modelling, asserting that the virus has the potential to kill tens of millions of people. Then step three, she says, there's a concerted effort by all levels of government and public health to ramp up testing for viral DNA, and they push aside the need for regulation at that point, bringing in social isolation. She then says, step four is when the number of cases and deaths start to plateau. Local officials claim it's too early to tell whether the virus has finished passing through their population. Therefore, the restrictive measures must continue. That was step four. Step five is about 2 or 3 weeks later. The dramatic increase in testing produces the desired goal of a significant upsurge in the number of people found to be testing positive for the virus. Then she says step six, large-scale human testing of many different types of antivirals and vaccines begins thanks to a concerted push from the World Health Organization, Bill Gates and his collaborators, pharmaceutical and biotech companies, governments and universities. Finally, step seven, soon the new virus starts another cycle around the globe, just as influenza and other viruses have every year for millennia. Officials again fanned the flames of fear by positing the potential for tens of millions of deaths among people not yet protected from the virus. So there's a brief summary. And, of course, one of the most interesting steps there is that, you know, we'll be looking potentially here anyway at a significant upsurge in the figures because, not because there's more people with the virus, but because the testing is becoming much more effective. What she's saying there is that due to this whole idea of having these enforced national lockdowns with no way out, mm-hmm. with everybody, however vulnerable they are to this, being forced to lock down, what you're doing is you're locking yourself into a pretty horrific no exit strategy, which is in fact what we were hearing with Gary Hopkins earlier, Matt Hancock talking about. They just don't know how they're going to get out of it at the moment.
Well, maybe there isn't a way out of it. I put it to you, what was the exit strategy from the Black Death? And the only thing that worked there just about is isolation, quarantine, people staying away from people who were ill, burning the clothes of people who were infected, getting rid of the bodies quickly and without people touching them.
But, I mean, there is a way out, and that's been proved by the South Koreans and the Swedes, thank God. You know,
the South Koreans have done the best, but they did it by, again, they're a militarized society. They treated it as a biowarfare attack, possibly because the Chinese had tipped them off. And, of course, it's not clear that it won't come back when they really... And don't forget, there may be no jobs to go back to. If the derivatives market crashes, as it may well do in the next few weeks, the whole world economy will go down the drain and there's no jobs to go back to. The virus may still be out there, but by that time, the shooting war in the South China Sea or the Strait of Hormuz, which you mentioned earlier, may already have started. And that's what we're at. The coronavirus is in a sense just a trigger for the collapse of the geopolitical system that we've been living under since 9/11. But of course, this is the real problem. And of course, in South Africa and India and all these other places, poor people are dying already from preventable diseases and they can't earn a living and all the rest of it. And the coronavirus is just a contingent factor in that. But of course, all of the developing countries, because of the dollar going up in price because of the safe haven effect. All of their national finances are being ruined. And the IMF is saying, all right, well, we'll have to go into all of these countries. And that just means basically the IMF gets their teeth into them. And both Venezuela and Iran, who have been forbidden to get IMF money, are so desperate they've asked for IMF money. And the Americans who run the IMF and said, you can whistle for that. So that's what we're looking at here. I think we're looking at a World War III scenario, Tony, not a coronavirus scenario. The coronavirus is just the immediate trigger.
And interesting, isn't it, that we may be coming towards a large global war, but the population of Britain has its movements already restricted. It's almost as if we're looking at kind of wartime movement restrictions, even worse sometimes than in, say, an occupied Nazi Europe, when we go into that war.
Yeah, but of course, if it is a biological weapon, Tony, it's dangerous. It's not just being made up. The Chinese have treated it as if it's dangerous. That's because they probably know more than we do about what it is. And that's why they're basically preparing to, both the Russians and the Chinese are absolutely clear, we are preparing to fight the United States of America and their British friends and their Israeli friends as well. We're going there. That's where we're going.
Well, one other story, let's just finish on, because one of the most important places that we go for news is YouTube. We'll find all sorts of things on there. And the boss of YouTube this week, Susan Wojcicki, has said that she will take down any videos which talk about vitamin C as being some sort of cure for what she calls the Chinese virus. We'll take it down, she says. Actually, this is one thing we're not really hearing very much about at all. I'm really quite shocked to see. One of the reasons that people will not die of this is if their immune system is in a good condition. And I'm absolutely amazed that there's been no talk from the health secretary or anybody else about making sure that people are taking daily doses of vitamin C and zinc, which are the two vitamins, minerals, which are the best for making sure you've got a good immune system, a healthy immune system, because if and when you do get this virus, it means that you get a bit of a head start on being able to deal with it. And so helping your natural immunity seems to take absolutely no part in the government's or the mass media's response, Martin. I haven't heard one single person talking about, you know, the idea of actually making sure you've got a bit of a stronger immune system to give yourself a better chance of surviving.
The whole idea that this is some kind of flu and we've just got to treat it like flu, if it's a bioweapon, that doesn't hold. It could be anything, and we just don't know. But you can imagine that the top military doctors in Russia and China are looking into this very, very carefully, because they're now going to have to fight, just like the Syrian army is going to have to fight with this in the atmosphere. And, of course, the other thing that hasn't been covered this week, but it's still pretty significant, is the prevention of chemical weapons. People have claimed that the Douma attack definitely was carried out by the Syrian government, which gives the casus belli to the Western powers again, even though in actual fact the people who carried out the investigation in Douma, the actual people on the ground, have already spoken up and says that's rubbish, we've got no evidence of a chemical weapons attack here. But of course, under normal circumstances, we'd be talking about that. We'd be talking about what's happening in Idlib province. We'd be talking about Yemen. We'd be talking about all of these things, but instead we're talking about coronavirus. And of course, there is possibly going to be some kind of showdown in the South China Sea. This is where we're going. And that we hardly notice it. Everybody's too busy talking about something else.
So thanks, Martin. That was Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers. Thanks also to the clip with Syrian girl. Thanks to her. And thanks also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. You can download our MP3s. You can listen in the car anywhere you like if you want. You'll find this show's podcast, story links and comment page and our contact details at thisweekoneword.org.uk. If you'd like to see us back on FM, do please use that website to contact BCFM and ask for the show to go back on FM. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable BCFM weekend. Do please join us for the BCFM Emergency Schedule Politics Show online on Friday or on FM 10 p.m. on Monday, or so we're told by BCFM managers. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.